Hello and welcome to the Full-Time Creator Podcast, where you'll get wisdom, tips, and inspiration from creators building their dream businesses. I'm your host, Zach Swinehart, and today I'm here with Joe Casabona, who I always say Casabona, but it's Casabona, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, those are close enough that, Joe Casabona is how I say it. Joey C, that's, Joey C.
I know Joey C from his podcast, How I Built It. And today's episode is going to be really weird. I've never done it like this before. He's apparently done it. But Joe runs a really big podcast. We'll let him do the intro in a minute. But he runs into this problem that I've seen with clients many times over the years, which is he has a very popular, long-running podcast, but most of his revenue comes from ads and sponsorships. And so the podcast isn't like a lead gen business asset in and of itself. It's basically just an advertising platform. And today we're going to essentially, I don't know if it counts as coaching, collaboration, mind mapping, brainstorm. We're going to do some adjective to see if we can find a way to alchemize his experience and the things that are working really well and his large audience into a more like regimented lead gen and email list growing platform. So to make this episode even weirder, it's going to go out both on Full-Time Creator and How I Built It. So hello to you if you're on How I Built It. Hello to you if you're on Full-Time Creator. In case you don't know Joe already, he started his career almost 20 years ago as a freelance web developer before realizing his true passion, which was to help coaches, course creators, and authors grow their podcasts into authority-building lead generators, which is kind of ironic given the context of today. Cobbler with the dirty shoes and whatnot. He does that through expert-tested systems that come with 10 years experience podcasting, 15 years teaching, and over 20 years working on the web. Joe backs up his 10 plus years of podcasting experience. I don't know if that's worth cutting, but we're going to keep it. With 20 plus years experience building websites and 15 plus years teaching, he makes 30 to 50K every year on sponsorships alone and gets 60,000 downloads every month from his show. When he's not producing and coaching podcasters, you can find him spending time with his family. You may even see one of them come down the stairs today if historic conversations are something to go off of. Or enjoying baseball or talking too much about Star Wars. You can see Boba Fett in the background, blurry. If you're on video, if you're on audio, you'll just have to imagine it. We were just talking about this a moment ago. He has had many high-profile guests on his podcast, including Peter Hollins, Wes Kao, and Emmy Award winners. So with this sexy intro out of the way, Joe, hello.
Hi. That was great. That was fun. Thank you for the fantastic intro. Sadly, no one will see my kids today because I have arranged for my babysitter to pick them up from school. Dang. I know. We can include a picture in the show notes or something like that. We just took a great one over the weekend, actually.
Lovely. So,
yeah.
So for today, Joe and I were planning how this will make logical sense for you to listen to. What we're thinking, I've had him dig up a bunch of metrics to basically paint the picture of where he's at now. And it's great that the intro includes this sponsorship revenue and downloads and stuff. So basically, I've had him dig up metrics on podcast listens all the way through, as well as downloads. We have metrics pulled up for Google Analytics. We have metrics pulled up for email subscribers. The thing that I initially thought was going to be kind of challenging is that if you're a longtime How I Built It listener, you know that the focus used to be different than it is now. So these days, How I Built It is oriented around like solo entrepreneurs and course creators. Right, Joe? Am I getting this right?
Yeah. Solopreneurs, creators in general, but okay. Definitely like people who are focused on creating content for their business is right. The better way to put it, I think.
Whereas back in the day, it was more of the WordPress crowd. I was initially concerned that there might be some audience crossover and that would further complicate what we're going to do today. But we've already made your listening life easier by combing through some metrics in advance, and at least we don't have that added complication. So we're thinking the way today is going to flow is going to essentially go like this. First off, we want to frame this thing for you, which is that Joe has a podcast with a large audience. This is a business asset. But currently, instead of this business asset benefiting his business, it's mostly just benefiting the businesses of his sponsors, because the only thing that gets promoted are the guests and the sponsors and then the pro show, which I'm interested to chat with him about how that comprises his revenue. So we're thinking the way that the episode will be structured is that first we're going to talk about where How I Built It, Joe's podcast, is at now. We're going to talk about how he makes money from the show. We're going to talk about how the revenue breaks down. And we're going to talk about kind of the big challenge. And then from there, we're going to segue into the, quote, second act, where we're talking about why you can't just rely on advertisers if you want to grow a proper business as a podcaster. And then from there, we're going to workshop a funnel, pretty much. My guiding motivation as we go is going to be essentially like, how can we aim for quick validation to gauge people's interest in different sorts of things before we like prescribe some funnel that we don't know if it's going to work or if people are actually keen yet. So this is a lot of framing, obviously, but I just want all of us on the same page. So I guess, Joe, maybe you could tell us as a starting point, tell us about the show, what you think is going really well. And also, before all of that, I just want to ask, if you could leave today's like interview, mastermind, whatever, if you could leave it with one thing or one piece of clarity, like what would you love to leave today with?
I think the thing I would love to leave today with is an outside perspective on what my main call to action value proposition should be, right? Because like, you know, like you said, right, like the cobbler shoes are dirty, or like the shoemaker's kids have no shoes. I have a hard time seeing the forest through the trees, whatever cliche analogy you want to use here.
Just mash a few together.
Yeah, exactly. So your shoes are dirty from running through the forest, which you can't see for the trees.
And if you had seen the trees, maybe they wouldn't have gotten dirty because you wouldn't have like tripped and like gone in the trees.
Right. Exactly.
Something about mud.
Yes. I help people with this all the time, but because I have this technical debt, or maybe this mental debt of what the show was and what I'm trying to make it, I'm having a hard time with what should I promote on the show? How should I position this show for my own expertise? And something this is like the main thing that I coach people with today is like, if you're starting a podcast today, I made a bunch of mistakes and I have a popular show, but I know it could do more to help me with my business.
When you coach, I'm just curious if you can step into it. And that's obviously the role of the whole call. But if you were coaching someone like you, if I was like, Joe, I am making 30-50K in ad revenue. I've done so many different things. Like, I don't know what my lead magnet should be. Like, what should I do? Tell me, Joe.
Yeah, I'm just going to take a quick sidestep here and say this reminds me of an episode of Scrubs where Turk wasn't feeling very well and he refused to go to the doctor. And so Heather Graham's character, who was a cameo on the show, asked him a bunch of questions where she repeated his symptoms back to him. And he said, oh, you should probably get your patient checked out. He probably has type 2 diabetes. And he's like, damn. So like, as you're framing this question to me, that this is exactly my reaction. I'm like, well, if I was coaching me, I would say a couple of things, right? What do you want to be known for? Who should your podcast help? What does your business do? Like all of these things that align properly for you. And then what's the number one thing that you use to get people onto your list, right? And so if I'm coaching me, I would say, well, you need to make How I Built It more podcast focused, or at least more focused on how solopreneurs can leverage their business with a podcast. Now, I'm going to throw a bunch of probably limiting beliefs at you. But I do have another podcast called Podcast Workflows that has no sponsors. That is just me expounding my expertise, right? And so I'd love to build that up to where How I Built It is at least engaged audience-wise more, right? Because solopreneurs and creators is a bigger audience than podcasters, right? Or wannabe podcasters. So I did start a separate show for that purpose. I think with How I Built It, right? And maybe we can get into this, is when I started it, I thought I would use it to support my business of selling online WordPress courses, which is why I was interviewing WordPress developers. The idea being, hey, you just learned how this popular page builder, Beaver Builder, works. if you want to, or how it started, if you want to learn how it works and you want to use it, check out my course over on what it was called at the time was WP in 1 month. Terrible name, by the way. Like, I locked myself into WordPress and then 1 month for some reason. I changed it to Creator Courses a couple years later.
For what it's worth, my email is still zach@websitesforless.org because 19-year-old Zach locked himself forever into not just being a cheap website provider, but also a .org, as if I couldn't think of something better in 2009. So anyway, don't beat yourself up too much on that one. I didn't mean to mess up your flow. Keep going. So you're talking about...
No, not at all. Initially, I mean, that's like, yeah.
Initially, how I built it was for WordPress. Keep going.
Yeah, and initially it was for supporting my business, but then like a funny thing happened on the way to the forum where people just kind of started reaching out to me and like, we're like, hey, we want to sponsor your podcast. And I made the decision then, well, if I'm going to have sponsors, I'm not going to pollute my proverbial airwaves with calls to action for my sponsors and calls to action for me. So the thinking at the time was I didn't want to confuse my listeners and I want my sponsors to get the best ROI possible. Since then, I mean, a lot has happened since I launched the show in 2016. The landscape has drastically changed and I probably realized in like 2019 that I had this huge, my biggest audience easily, and I wasn't leveraging that to grow my own business. So I just kind of had like sponsors and like you said in the intro, like $50,000 a year, pretty great chunk of change for making content I love to make. But as far as like actually growing my business, it wasn't doing anything. And part of that was like, I was kind of all over the place, right? I was doing WordPress stuff and I started to do podcast stuff and maybe I should do course creator stuff. And it's probably just in the last year and a half that I've really decided to focus on, okay, no more WordPress ever again. No more WordPress as far as my main income and my main offerings go. I want to help people podcasting. And then in the last 6 months, it's been, okay, everybody who's ever launched a podcast has thought I should create a course on how to launch a podcast. So like, that's not going to be a niche where I can differentiate myself, but I'm real good at automating. And so that should be, okay, I help podcasters improve their workflows and their processes and save 12 hours a week, because that's a real pain point that a lot of podcasters have.
So a couple things I want to zoom in on from what you just said. The first question is, if I were booking you for coaching, and I was like, hey, Joe, I started this podcast called The Full-Time Creator, which I started for a similar reason. Like, I, as a conversion rate optimization expert, as a web developer, as a many types of thing, in your case, short video chopper experimentally, I like serving course creators. I've always enjoyed them. I'm a course creator myself. It's my favorite audience. So I felt comfortable starting The Full-Time Creator, even if I didn't have a clear monetization scope yet, because I knew that no matter what I do, whether it's freelance stuff, agency stuff, courses, whatever, like, I will always want to work with creators. And let's say we zoom forward in the future, because right now my podcast gets like no listens. Let's say it's been a year. I'm like, all right, now I've got some people approaching me wanting to sponsor it. So I'm a little bit torn, Joe, because I've got this lead magnet where it's like, which I do, by the way, I should promote it right now, crowiz.co/go, where I show course creators how to often double their opt-ins within like 30 minutes by having a full page pop-up lead magnet like form. This is how this whole conversation with you came about, because this is something that I want to recommend to you. But before we can even talk about that, we need to first get this foundation of what the heck even is the lead magnet. So let's say I come to you and I'm like, Joe, I've got this lead magnet. It's great. Whenever someone signs up for it and implements it, they get really good results. And a lot of the time when they get that first result, they're like, ooh, it'd be so cool to do A/B testing, but I don't want to. I wish I could hire someone to do this for me. Who could I hire? And then they get the email from Zach that says, hey, I can just do this for you. And all told, my average value per subscriber is, I don't know, let's say $3 within 30 days. So it's a very good lead gen source. But now I have these advertisers coming, offering to pay me however much per episode. I don't know anything about how podcast sponsorship works. what should I do, Joe? Because I want to keep promoting my lead magnet. I don't want sponsors to feel like I'm stealing from them, but I also am not willing to cut off my only list building mechanism. What do you recommend that I do?
So what I've done basically up until we started working together was have a pre-roll CTA that was just mine, right? And I've recently decided that a pre-roll CTA is not good because I also tell people, like, your latest episode could be someone's first episode. And the first thing you're asking them is, hey, give me this thing. It's kind of like an overeager salesperson watching you walk in the door and be like, hey, what do you want to buy? Right? Like, just give me some space, man. Like, chill. I'll come to you if I want something. And so I took that off and I'm trying to figure out probably the best place to put it, which I think is going to be after the intro now. But all of that is to say that, yes, you should definitely still have your own CTA. And that's okay to have with sponsors. The way you could do it is there are one or two different methods, maybe two or three different methods. But one is, say, I have an ad inventory of one sponsor per 10 minutes. And so if you have a 30-minute episode, I'm going to have max three sponsors. One of those sponsor spots is reserved for my thing, right? The other thing that you could do is say, hey, the very first thing people hear very early on, I would say within the first 5 minutes, is for my thing. I'm going to try to give them value. So for this show, I always do the cold open and then I do an intro and I tell them the top takeaways right at the beginning. Like, if you think you've got it from there, stop listening. You've got what you need, right? Then I think I would hit them with a, by the way, I also help people with their podcasts, or if you like more of this, I do this thing. Here's my lead magnet, right? Or if you want more of these episodes, which is what I've been doing lately, my latest call to action has been like, hey, become a member, right? And then save the sponsor spots for the mid-roll, right? And so you can just say, my CTA is going to be within the first 5 minutes. I'll hit him with that again at the end. But the mid-roll sponsor spots are just for people who have paid me to be there. And then that's like kind of two ways that you can do it without necessarily overwhelming your audience.
Here's a thought that I'd like your take on. I think it's fun that we're coming together like this because I know like literally nothing about podcasting other than you're supposed to show up and say some stuff. Mm-hmm. I know a little more than that, I hope. But, yeah. You know, I just show up and like ask the questions I wish I could get the answers to. That's basically all I know about podcasting. And you know loads about podcasting. And then meanwhile, I know quite a bit about like website conversions, I don't know how much you know about. Something I know from the website conversion standpoint that I learned ages ago with regards to like Google ads or whatever is that on a website, the ads that perform best are the ones that don't look like ads. And it's mm-hmm. why like oftentimes text links to opt-in forms within the body of a post perform much better than say the lead magnet promo at the end. But of course, this is more work. But nonetheless, it's that level of specificity is why content upgrades do so well versus generic opt-ins. And right. why the things that are within the text do so well because it doesn't look like an ad. And so what I wonder is if maybe, this is where I want your take, maybe part of the solution here, I'm not saying don't do like air quotes advertisements, which by the way, part of me not knowing anything about podcasting, tell me when I'm supposed to stop talking so you can put advertisements in here for your show. But what I wonder is if maybe a good practice for podcasters is to be strategic about how you plan your episode such that there is the air quotes content upgrade within the scope of the show. So just like a minute ago when I was saying a lot of creators don't have good full page opt-ins, that, and then I promoted my lead magnet. Like that's to me, this is me not knowing about podcasting, but to me from an advertising and positioning standpoint, it's the best way to advertise because it's not an ad. It's just part of the content. What do you think about that? Like strategically making sure that there's interstitial content lead magnet advertisements within an episode. Whew, lots of words.
I think that's really smart. And someone who does that really effectively is Ramit Sethi on his podcast, right? He'll do these like combined coaching calls. where like a couple will come and they'll chat with him for 10 minutes and they'll be like, you know, like we're trying to pay down our credit card debt, but he just bought a boat that he says he needs or whatever. Like, what should we do? And then like he'll do the coaching call and he'll be like, for those listening, like if you want a template for couples who want to combine their finances, just like I did for this couple here, here's the thing that you need, right? And he'll have like 3, 4, 5 of those, depending on how many coaching calls he has in an episode. It's usually like one per coaching call. And that's super effective, right? Because usually I tell people one call to action, right? Podcast listeners are barely listening to you. They're working out. They're driving. They're trying to make dinner while their kids are screaming and like ramming their head into my legs, which is that's that picture painted to you by something that happened 2 days ago. So they may not hear everything you're saying. So you want to repeat your call to action. But what Ramit is doing is very effective. Well, it appears to be, at least, because he keeps doing it. So I think that's a really good idea because you're giving a little and then you're saying, hey, for more, you can get this thing for free.
Yeah. And that's the content upgrade. And that we're describing the podcast version. And again, coming at this as a CRO guy, the thing that like I'm used to my juicy website metrics. I know who saw something. I know who clicked it. And I find it so freaking difficult with podcasting to not know. Something I've been playing with, though, that I'm rolling around in my mind as we're talking about this. When I shoot, so I told you about that series that I'm working on for DYF called 6 Months to Six Figures, where it's essentially coaching calls. This gets aired on both YouTube and like on the audio podcast. And I've been wondering, how many people that come to the page come from the audio? How many people come from YouTube? The idea of having one CTA link scares me because I don't know what is the most worth my time. So what I've been doing whenever I promote the community page from those, I do 2 takes. So I do 1 take where I go to link 1 and 1 take where I go to link 2, and I mark it in Fathom. And so when my video editor edits it, she knows that when she's producing the YouTube version to have the YouTube CTA, and when she's producing the podcast version, have the podcast CTA. And these live in my website just with the Pretty Links plugin. So I can just see how many people, it's like janky data, but I can nonetheless see how many clicks did this one link get? How many clicks did this link get? And so I'm kind of thinking about that here. I'm thinking about how could you do an A/B test in the context of a podcast? Because you're talking about moving from pre-roll to a bit more into the episode. And it strikes me that there could be a really basic A/B test that could be done. Maybe it's a bit more nerdy than you'd want, where you could actually have, like for one lead magnet, we could have a couple of different CTA links. And if, again, this is nerdy, so I'm sorry to you, I'm sorry to the listener, we can backtrack, but I got to spit out the idea because it sounds so freaking good. We could have one short link that you promote in a specific spot. So say you're doing a pre-roll test and you want to say, I wonder what my opt-in rate from the podcast is for a pre-roll lead magnet promotion. And I wonder what my opt-in rate is from a mid podcast. And you do like everything else the same. So if you're going to do one at the very end, which it sounds like you probably should, you do that on both. So the only difference really is the pre-roll. You could run this where you do like 5 in one place, like 5 different episodes in one place, 5 different episodes in the other. And then we could look at the amount of link clicks and then get the data on the amount of episode listens. And then probably could even segment further and get data on how many actual subscribers. But even just link clicks divided by episode listens kind of gives us our air quotes click-through rate. Like this is what I would look for if I were running ads. I'd want to know my CTR. So this is almost like our listening click-through rate. But anyway, I wanted to spit this out just to get into your subconscious. It's not relevant for right now. Let's circle back. So we were talking about where to promote yourself. If you had relevant, I'm just going to call them content upgrades because that's what they would be called on a blog. So content upgrade, just to define it in case it was unclear for somebody, is basically if you have a blog post that's about budgeting and this blog post promotes a lead magnet that's like, get my 10 budgeting tips to start budgeting by the end of the day. That is going to do way, 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 way better than if that blog post promotes your generic lead magnet, which is something like, here are my 5 tips for financial independence. And that is also going to do way better than if you promoted that budgeting lead magnet on a different post that was not about budgeting. It performs better because of the specificity, but the trade-off is time cost. If you want to make a special lead magnet for every blog post, you're going to be spending a bunch of time, and most people don't have the traffic to support that. So unless you get loads and loads and loads of visitors to like a few key pillar posts, at least for client sites. I found there's not usually a big ROI for content upgrades unless they're relevant to a handful of posts. But anyway, I want to establish that. So if we're imagining these interstitial promotions of a lead magnet, pretend you did an episode where you had one Joe ad in air quotes. So like you just promoting your main lead magnet, or maybe two. Do you think there's, and then let's say one of your sponsors, the sponsor of that episode listened to the episode. Do you think they would feel differently if they listened to the episode in the parallel universe iteration where it just had those two designated ad spots that you talked about on your sponsors page? Would they feel differently hearing that versus if they heard the other parallel universe iteration where in addition to those two ad spots, you had these kind of like more casual off the cuff, hey, if you want more, go to this URL kinds of things. Like, would they hear that and be like, feels like he's really saturating them with his stuff and mine is an afterthought?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And part of it is because, right, that's kind of the nature of podcast ads and podcasting, right? They're like paying, you know, it's, imagine if like Ford got mad at NBC for advertising an NBC show, right? Like that's kind of the same thing, right? Yeah. Unless they, and I make this really clear, right? Because I've had sponsors who are like, we want to be the only sponsor, or I run all three ads together because I read some data at the end of last year saying like, that's what listeners prefer. And it's, I mean, if I'm being transparent, it's probably so they could skip the ads, but if they're skipping ads, they're probably not going to buy the ads anyway. Like they're not going to buy anyway. They don't care. You know, some people will be like, I want to be the first mid-roll ad. Right. And I'm like, okay, so exclusivity costs extra. You have to buy out the inventory for that episode. If they buy out the inventory, I'm not saving an ad for me, right? Because they've paid for exclusivity. I'm still going to talk about my stuff casually, right? That's just like, it's home field advantage, right? It's like how, I don't know, WP Beginner has a blog post about the best forms plugins, and lo and behold, WP Forms is the number one that they recommend, right? Yeah. That's just home field advantage. And then I'm going to charge more if they specifically request to be the first mid-roll, right? Cause I do try to mix those up. I know that one's probably going to perform the best, and all things being equal, I want to mix it up for my sponsors. I want to do right by them as much as possible. So unless they say, we want to be literally the only thing you promote in this episode, which they're going to have to pay a lot for. I don't think there's going to be a problem, right? Something I did experiment with, here's a little transgression maybe. Something I did experiment with was not offering like product exclusivity within the same episodes for the same logic I just used for the television commercials, right? Ford advertises and then like, two ads later, you see Kia advertising. That does not work as well in the podcasting space. I got some pretty considerable backlash for that. So when I tried to do like non-exclusive product category, right, I did get pushback on that, right? The sponsors were like, wait, you're going to promote another, let's say Forms plugin. You're going to promote another Forms plugin in the episode I paid you for already. So I think that's kind of, that is expected in podcasts, right? And it's probably because there are so few ads in a podcast. Whereas with television, you're getting 3, 4, 5 ads every ad break, and ad breaks are every 7 to 10 minutes in a sitcom, maybe even more in sports. And so there's a lot more ad inventory to go around. And so that exclusivity is not necessarily expected in television.
That makes a lot of sense. My question would be in that context of exclusivity, just to make super sure. So suppose an advertiser is expecting that they have a certain level of exclusivity, but that thing is in direct competition with your own lead magnet. I mean, I would think it's like, I don't know, this is why I want to check. I would think it could be unreasonable for them to expect you to not talk about your own thing. But at the same time, I could also think I could see them saying, well, that's what I'm paying you for. I'm paying you to be the priority. So if you were advertising for Kia and you were Ford, Do you think Kia would expect you to not talk about your Ford trucks?
Yeah, so this is where I have a little bit of autonomy over what I choose to advertise, right? This is different for, let's say, dynamically inserted ads, right? Like what you get on like Megaphone or something like that, or Spotify, right? I think around this time, as we recorded last year, there was a lot of backlash because Spotify accidentally advertised alcohol on kids podcasts and like recovering alcoholic podcasts, right? Wow. Because they just bought the entire inventory. That's like a danger with dynamic ads, right? Mine are not dynamically sold.
Okay.
They are dynamically inserted by me, but they're never changed. So if, let's just say Pat Flynn comes to me and says, hey, I want to advertise my podcast workflows course on your podcast, I would say there's a conflict. Thank you for your interest, but there's a conflict of interest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then perfect. So with that said, what seems to me to be a good, like air quotes, A-B test, once we sort out what a good lead magnet would be, both for you and any podcaster listening, but I want to get the Joe stamp of approval before I prescribe this, would be that whenever you promote your lead magnet in an air quotes official ad spot, you use one CTA link. And whenever you kind of casually throw it out, you use a different one. Only so that you can later track to see, because I'd be really keen to know which one is more effective. Is it the 6 times I casually say it or the 1 time that I very intentionally say it as an advertisement? I would really like to get that data. And I just simply don't have access to it with my own because my podcast just doesn't have a lot of listeners. So I really would have no idea. But it sounds like if you did this, once we zoom in on a lead magnet, if you did this for like 10 episodes, you'd probably start to get some pretty clear data about what's working and what's not working as well. What do you think about this approach?
I have thoughts, and I will give them to you right after we take a break for our sponsors. What a cliffhanger there, right? An incredible 3-minute cliffhanger.
And a 0-minute cliffhanger for the full-time creator folks. They just saw us.
They just positions. Heard me say that and then heard me come right back.
Yeah, that's great.
Now, see, you get to see how the sausage gets made a little bit, right? Like, yeah. That's the dynamic part.
Yeah.
And I'll just say as a quick aside, like, I do it dynamically to give me flexibility in the ads, right? So, like, if advertising is running a sale, a limited time sale, I could swap that audio out after the sale ends, which is, you know, it's a little less, it's a little bit more work for me, but it does right by my sponsors. And that's really important. So, I mean, as you said from the intro, right, I've been a web developer for 20 years. I know the importance of tracking these things. Google Analytics has always kind of scared and confused me. So I never really tracked this stuff. I just figured, well, if they take the action I want them to take, I will know they've taken the action I want them to take, right? That sort of thing. You know, like some stores don't track how many people walk in the door because they care about the purchases, right? That said, I have been better about this lately. I use a plugin, a WordPress plugin called Redirection, very similar to Pretty Links, where I have been including UTM codes in the redirect. So now I can better track where people are coming from and at what point people are coming from. But I haven't done it for specific spots in the episode, right? So maybe that's definitely my next step. Where I have been using it mostly is, again, because I know this advice and I'm not following it on my own podcast, is when I guest on somebody else's podcast, I give a full, I like the opt-in is always based on what we talked about. I don't know. I know the URL before we record. I don't know what that page looks like before we record, right? Because if I really mention like the Smash framework or something like that, that's going to be the opt-in. If I mention processes, it's going to be my process template. And then the form I'm using logs the URL. And so I know how effective that page is being for me. I'm not doing that on my own show, except for the sponsors, right? Every sponsor gets their own short link. And so it'll be howibuilt.it/whatever. And then in the redirection plugin, I can see like how many people are clicking. What I'm not seeing is if certain episodes are more effective than others, right? That's also data that I can maybe try to track better.
Yeah, I mean, that one would be tough because the only way I could think to do that would be if each episode had a different short link for the sponsor. That would be the only way, because unless there was some way in the podcast app to actually have the CTA link on the screen, it's not like we get the option to do that. So you'd have to say almost like hibby.co/Ford1. And that would mean they came from episode one. Like, I can't think of any good way to do it. But even without that, even if you don't know what episode drove the click, doing it a bit more broad, because I would think that, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but when I'm thinking of A/B tests, I think, what's the biggest thing I can easily change first? Like, change the big, easy stuff first, see what it does. Mm-hmm. And then only change the harder, smaller stuff if I absolutely have to. And I would think that in this case, similar to how you can change a headline, and that takes a second, but it's the big thing to change. I would think that more than a specific episode being favorable for a sponsor, it would be the kind of position within the episode that is the really big driver. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree there, right? Because again, the other problem with A/B testing is you don't want to A/B test too many things at once, right? You want to try to test one thing so that you know, right? It's an experiment, and if you change too many variables, you don't know which one was the effective change. So
yeah,
I would agree, right? And so the thing that I can definitely do, especially because I haven't sold out my ad inventory for the back half of the last 2 months of the year, I guess, is I can create a new sponsor spot for the lead magnet, right? And again, for context, that currently, if you hear three ads and one is mine, it's for the membership right now. And it's actually a little bit outdated because I changed the membership. So I'm kind of super messing that part up, right? If you've heard, you won't on this episode, but if you've listened recently and you're join now for $5 a month, that plan's gone. I'm not even offering that plan anymore. So this is definitely a case of, again, the shoemaker's kids have no shoes, right?
So not to inadvertently turn this into a therapy session, but I would like to ask why. Do you think it is some sort of limiting belief system self-sabotage, or do you think it's just, you have kids, you have a busy life, you've got so much to do that it's just frankly not an urgent fire to put out? Which camp do you think this is more in?
So I think it's more the second camp, right? It's also been a little bit, I've got too much work to do, right? There's the adage that most freelancers won't starve to death. They'll die of overeating, right? That's a little bit where I'm at right now, is I have a lot on my plate. I launched a daily podcast in the beginning of October, which is fine. That process is great. I spend, some amount of time on Fridays recording 10 episodes because they're 5 minutes each, right? And then my VA does everything else, and that's fine. But I've been a little bit distracted by that. And then where some people have a good product strategy, I don't. And so the membership change was something I did without really making a checklist of what do I need to do to fix, what do I need to do to prepare for this change? I just did it. I'm I'm going to turn off these two prices and then go on my merry way. It's not until I was talking about the ad roll that I'm I haven't even updated that. I've updated it when I mention it casually during the episode, right?
Yeah.
And so it's an easy change. It's a dynamic ad, right? One of the great benefits of doing a dynamic ad. But if I'm sitting there wondering hey, why isn't this converting? It's probably because if people do want to do that, they go to a page expecting to see a $5 a month plan and they see a $25 a month plan.
Yeah, that might not be great for conversions, theoretically.
Right.
Wouldn't want to put a hard yes, because there's a chance.
Yeah. It's a soft yes, right?
It's 100%. Yeah, this makes a lot of sense. And I can say that despite the fact that I was doing some looking the other day at, because I'm working on this new conversion wizard brand, because saying ZachSwinehart.com on a podcast very difficult because how do you spell Zach? How do you spell Swinehart? And mm-hmm. I spent so many years doing this and I was just like, I don't know what I would call my agency. So I'm just going to be Zach Swinehart. And it's awful. You go to ZachSwinehart.com, you see my EDM music. You see my blog when I was doing like Eat, Pray, mm-hmm. Love days. And you see web design services, yeah. Just terrible. So all of that said, I was doing some digging for this conversion wizard brand. And I found that for one of my clients who I was doing CRO for, I literally 7X'd her opt-ins and added an extra 10,000 subscribers to her list. And no one freaking does this because it's not an urgent fire. I have crappy, dirty shoes. DYF, I launched a full page lead magnet, converts at about 2.75%, never ran an A-B test. And I found that like you can get these full page opt-ins to like 5% with minimal testing. And I think that's where diminishing returns start to hit. But up until then, it's easy pickings. But nonetheless, people don't do this because it doesn't feel urgent because, you know, no one's asking you to do it. No one's right. saying they noticed a bug on your site because there's not a bug. It's just simply an absence of a thing being done. So with all that said, I think for you, the path forward here is to make it easy. And by the way, if you're listening, this is going to be an example. I'm going to frame this as a teachable moment. So I'm going to teach you, the listener, how I would frame a content upgrade in a podcast, which is like, if you're listening and you resonate and you're like, gosh, I should be doing split testing, but I'm not because I'm just lazy and I just want someone to do it for me. You could have Zach do it for you at crowiz.co/go. That's my lead magnet where you can learn how to do it yourself or have me do it. And Joe, if you want to cut me saying this out of your podcast, mark it, cut it. But nonetheless, for what we're talking about today, I think that at least for me, I can get overwhelmed saying like, oh, well, I need to have all the right data. I need to do this the right way. But then that obsession with doing the right way, it's like that don't let perfect be the enemy of the good or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe the low-hanging fruit approach here for what we should have Joe go out and test. This is like what I'm playing with. I'm not officializing it as your homework yet, but it's what I'm playing with as my loose prescription. Would be playing with two lead magnets that are intended to validate interest. And I'll explain where my head's at there in a minute. And playing with two short links for each that serve the role of essentially like validating what part of the podcast or what advertising context is most effective. Because that's essentially what I want to know is, number one, I want to know what your audience is interested in learning from you. That's like a gigantic thing. And I'm looking at time and I want to try to be really efficient so we can get into that. Cause that's the real meat today, is to find out, like, I'm going to just try to keep guiding you through self-coaching like you would for a client, but finding out what the thing is that you want to coach people on. And right now you're in this direction of automation stuff. So we're going to probably, you know, peel back the layers there a bit. So I first want to find out, do people actually care about automation? Because this is the thing with like Conversion Wizard, for example. Like it doesn't matter that it's cool that I added these extra 10,000 leads if someone doesn't believe it. Like you and I have been talking about this with shorts, right? The more of these conversations I have with people about video shorts, the more I've come to appreciate this is a terrible idea for an agency offering. Because number one, I haven't seen results from it yet. So I can't actually speak to results. Number two, I don't think people really see the qualitative difference between a human curating them and an AI. So it doesn't matter if my shorts are actually better. It only matters if a person values it. And that's the thing that, like, the classic thing with any online business is that people want to know, how do I get more traffic? How do I get more sales? Maybe how do I get more leads? Like, that's even one to validate. And so what I think would be interesting to do here, unless you've already done some, this is what I want to pick into with you, is having one lead magnet that validates, do creators care about automation? And then another lead magnet that is something that's a little bit more the obvious thing, and just see how they compare. Like, for example, I am starting a podcast. I have no idea, how do I even get listeners to my podcast? And I bet you, I would put big money on the fact that pretty much any podcaster wishes they knew how to get more podcast listeners. I don't know, though, like from our conversations, if you would feel comfortable teaching that, if you feel like you know how to do that. But assuming that you do, like, let's, because I know you talk about, what's the word? Is it directory optimization or something like that? Suppose that was a thing you knew about, the lead mag, one lead magnet to test could be about that. One could be about the automation thing. But then none of this matters if you don't actually want to long-term be teaching about directory optimization. So all this has to be reverse engineering of the end goal. That's why I don't want to get into any of this specifically now. I'm just painting the picture that, scroll back. I know I'm getting on my little Zach rabbit hole here. The thing I'm thinking is that we test for two things to validate. Number one, offer validation. Does someone care about this thing versus this thing? That's like one variant. Number two, add spot positioning. Is it more effective to promote my own lead magnet in the official air quotes ad spots or within the content? How do you feel about these as two things to validate as it pertains to like your overwhelm and the tasks that it will involve testing these two things?
I think that's great.
Cool.
Because I have a bunch of lead magnets, right? My overarching fear, maybe this is something we should have talked about earlier, is that the people who listen to How I Built It don't care about podcasting, right? Because I've created this show that very predates my podcasting stuff. I have a big audience. I've taken a long time to like glacially switch niches, right? So like it was like it was WordPress developers, then it was WordPress business owners, then it was business owners, then it was creators, now it's solopreneurs. And like I definitely saw a dip in downloads getting from A to B, right? But now I've maybe like doubled my monthly downloads
from A
yeah.
So like you're more than you ever were, even at your highest A.
Yeah, that's okay, exactly right.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the people who listen today definitely know what I do. What I don't know is, do they want that for themselves? Or are they only tuning in for the guests? I have been doing more content. Actually, this is really helpful, right? Because you, in the pre-show, you asked me to... First of all, I haven't even answered your question yet, and I'm very aware of that. In the pre-show, you asked me to like look at analytics and see if I can see consumption, which like podcast analytics is kind of a nightmare. But I will say, of like my last 6 to 8 episodes, the most consumed ones have been the importance of digital storytelling, like this week's episode as we record this. And I talk a lot about podcasting in that one because that's the lens through which I'm telling this story. And then my bonus episode where I do a deep dive of the Trailer Park podcast, which is what I do for my podcast awesome. Workflows newsletter. So that's pretty good validation there, right? And then like Cody Sheehy's episode, right? I mean, like that's like an Emmy Award winning producer tells us about storytelling, right? And so like, there's probably a thread here. I'm telling good stories. I'm talking about storytelling. I will say that the questions I get most from my audience, right? And this is how I've settled on my current product offering and what my membership offers are, yeah, like, how do I get more listeners? How do I get more listeners? How do I get sponsors? They'll say specifically, and I try to guide them kind of like, yeah, sponsors are great, but like, think about other stuff. And how do you run 3 podcasts and also have 3 kids? Right. And so people aren't necessarily asking me, how do you automate? Right. They're probably not using that word, but they're saying, I have a podcast. I'm totally overwhelmed. I'm worried I'm going to get burnt out. And it doesn't even feel like it's worth it because no one's listening. What do I do?
Can I have you repeat that just for myself and the listener? Because I want you to repeat that pain, because I think that's what I want to spend. So let's hear one more time.
Yeah. So the thing that I've heard, if I'm coalescing the feedback I've gotten into a sentence, is I have a podcast. I feel overwhelmed. I'm worried I'm going to get burnt out. And it doesn't even seem like it's worth it because no one is listening.
And I'm going to just like leave the silence for dramatic effect, but I'm writing this down.
Yeah, that's cool. That's right. Yeah. Let it linger. Right. I spiked the camera. Right. That's what they say in movie production. when an actor looks at the camera and they're not supposed to, they'll say, oh, they spiked the camera.
Was it you I was talking to or somebody else where somebody was talking about like a pause getting cut and someone said something like really sad, but then the silence got cut and so it made it seem not sad? Was that you or is this someone else? Am I confusing it?
Oh, this was somebody else. That's like the danger of using like those podcasts.
That was it. Someone was like, and then my son died. And then it was a pause and they were like, and I'm trying to move on. But the cut was like, and then my son died and I'm trying to move on. Like, it was just like, it changed the whole tonality in like a terrible way.
Yeah, it changes the whole feel. Yeah.
So
imagine hearing that on like 2X and then my son died and I'm trying to move on. Like, oh, wow.
Or like, my son died, but I'm moving on. That would be the ultimate one, right? Like the pause there. Anyway, on that dour note. So I think this is great. And I've gotten some, I noticed in interviews, it's why I love podcasting. Like, when I get into this, there's like a certain activation side. I mean, I don't know if you can relate to this, where it's like we vibe on the right level and the like mastermind magic starts to happen. And I get really excited and I have a hard time not cursing. I told Joe I would not curse in this because his podcast is clean, but I wanted to say I'm so freaking excited. Okay, great. But I said freaking. I said freaking, so you didn't have to believe it.
I have the button, so I like to use it sometimes, you know?
So here's why I'm feeling excited. I'm feeling excited because you've said some really, really good stuff that I think is the gold here. And I'm noticing that there might be two parallel potential audiences. A couple things I want to circle back to. So one of them, you said that you're not sure if people care about podcasting. And we talk about this in Double Your Freelancing all the time. Like, people don't care about a website. People don't care about an app. Nobody wants a website built because they want a website built. They want a website built because what they believe the website will do for them and their business. And I think there are a handful of people in the world who know they want to be a podcaster. They're like, oh, it'd be so cool to talk to people all day. Like, I'm thinking about Nathan Wrigley, right? And probably you, but like Nathan Wrigley, I think is like, he was born to be a podcaster, that guy. Because he's just so good at it, so natural at it. He seems to like really, really love being a podcaster. But I would also, sorry, Nathan, if you're hearing this, if you feel this is wrong, I would also say Nathan is like a pretty good example of someone who's not using the podcast as a business asset, but as an end in and of itself. And that's what we're talking about here to kind of move past. And so all that being said, for the typical business owner and the typical How I Built It listener, What I noticed, like in Double Your Freelancing, in the blueprint, Brennan teaches this process of freelancers to start a podcast as an authority builder, as like a path to get in front of your audience. And the big objection we hear is like a developer is in our course saying like, I want to be a podcaster. I'm a developer. I didn't come here to be a podcaster. I don't want to start a freaking podcast just to get web design leads. That's the biggest objection. Right. I would think that for it's less of a big objection for creators, right? Because like every creator or most creators expect that they are going to be content marketers. Most developers don't. But nonetheless, if someone's like, oh, let's ask you this. So who do you think the avatar of a How I Built It listener is that is a creator and probably a content creator, but it's like, I don't want to be a podcaster, or I'm like, I'm not actively interested in it. Who would you say that person is? And the reason to paint this for you, the reason I'm asking is that coming back to this, I believe that the secret here is to show how podcasting helps you reach your business goals and that it doesn't have to be so hard, expensive, scary, other synonym probably because I keep rattling off the same words. And if it's like, yo, here are the outcomes that you get. If you podcast for a year, you will suddenly find yourself keynoting. You will suddenly find yourself getting joint venture partnerships. You'll get access to all these doors that are opening that never would have before. I mean, for me, I always thought of podcasting as a lead gen thing. But since being a podcaster, I've learned, in my opinion, the power of podcasting is as a relationship builder. Like, I don't think you and I would have, we're going to be bros now after this. We wouldn't have been bros like this if we didn't do this episode. And that wouldn't have happened without podcasting. And so I feel like connecting those lines and conquering the objections could be a perfect lead magnet, like how to start your own podcast this afternoon without pain. So I'm curious if you can imagine a content creator who's like happy with, I don't know, social media or blogging or whatever it is they do now, but they're like, I don't know about podcasting. Let's hear their first person objections and reason why they want to.
Aren't there already too many podcasts? Number one objection I hear, right? Yeah, but that's like a lot of work. And I'm much more comfortable making social posts, right? That's another one. And then I'd rather put my time into YouTube because it's easier to get discovered on YouTube, which I don't think is, I mean, yes, mechanically, but if you don't make standout content, no, right? So I think those are probably the three biggest objections, with number one far and away, right? Aren't there already too many podcasts? Well, there are like 30 billion, sorry, there's 30 million YouTube channels, and there's like 2 million active podcasts.
So how would you address these? Like the, not necessarily too many podcasts comparative to YouTube, but just, I mean, for me, I'm doing this podcasting. I was interviewing Brian McAnulty the other day from Heights Platform, and he said something I thought was really interesting, which was that for his podcast and his blog, both of them, he had to post for like a year. You have scrunched eyebrows. Why do you have scrunched eyebrows?
I just spoke to him yesterday about doing a podcast swap with him. That's so funny. I did not know him before our call.
Well, tell him I said hi. If we do, I can make a mutual connection if you want.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so he was saying that for both his blog and podcast, it was like flat, 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 flat for a whole freaking year before he saw an exponential growth curve up. And I would think that if I were trying to sell somebody on podcasting versus, say, social media, that would maybe be the hard sell, is like social media. And I suck at social media. I've never gotten any results, so I don't even know any of this. But I would expect that social media gives you faster results, but it's more of a hamster wheel because you don't have any platform ownership. And that podcasting, you at least own an audience a little bit more, in that a lot of social media platforms kind of make you pay to get in front of your own audience. Whereas, to my knowledge, none of the podcast platforms are like, yo, if you want your subscriber to actually see your new episode, you need to pay us to surface it. I don't know. But what I'm getting at here is, like, how do you counter these objections? So the aren't there too many podcasts, no one's going to find my, like, what's behind the aren't there too many podcasts? Is it I don't have anything unique to say? Is it there's too much competition? What's feeding that?
It's definitely that, right? It's the I don't have anything unique to say, which is what people said when blogs were starting to get big too, right? Why would I start a blog about X when there are already blogs about X? Well, I mean, there are not blogs about X with your, I can't say X anymore because that's what Twitter's called. Why would I start a blog about microphones when there are already blogs about microphones? Okay, but there's not blogs about like your experience with microphones, right? One, my easily my best performing YouTube video is how to set up the Sony A6400. I learned how to set up the Sony A6400 watching YouTube videos that were incomplete because they had some assumed knowledge of video equipment. So I made a video. Hey, do you not know anything about video equipment? Here's how to set up an A6400. Easily my top performing video. So you have... Podcasts are not just topic, right? You want just topic, you can talk to AI. Podcasts are topic plus perspective. If you can do that, then you have a good shot at making a good podcast. And then the other thing I would say to people is, so going on social media is like planting seeds in someone else's garden, right? You're sowing the seeds, but then they're going to reap all of the benefits of the crop. Whereas a podcast or your blog, right? But let's just say podcast. That's like having your own farm and doing a farm share. You plant the seeds, you get the crop, and then you can distribute the crop however you want. You don't just have to distribute it to your podcast feed. You can create short videos. You can create blog posts. You can turn the best quotes into social posts, right? You're getting so many pieces of content from a 30 to 60 minute interview or episode.
So if you, let's imagine a social media person. I don't know who you think, like, how do you, well, here's a question. Most creators that are getting some traction that are only on one platform, Let's say, let's do one avatar of social and one avatar of YouTube. For social, I could definitely see the argument for podcasting. But I wonder for the YouTube, I mean, frankly, if I were to try to convince a YouTuber to do podcasting, I would say, like, it's just, it's easy extra platforms of content. Like my solo episode I did last week, I think I told you in email, that became 6 top funnel YouTube videos, became the basis for my lead magnet and my offer funnel, all from this very intentionally crafted solo episode. Like, that's cool. But yeah, what would your argument be? Like, I don't know if you've ever seen yourself convince someone, but if you imagine yourself convincing a YouTuber to take up podcasting, like, what's the thing, if you've ever done it before, what's the thing that tips them over the edge? Or if a social media person, what tips them over the edge to be like, ah, yeah, this, I should do this.
Yeah. So for a YouTuber, I would definitely go like that route. Like it's an easy ad. It's an easy add on for you. Right. But it also diversifies your content and your potential income. CGP Gray. I love this guy. I don't know if you've watched his videos. He makes explainer videos about super interesting topics. Like he did like the origin of the name Tiffany. Just really interesting stuff. So he also doesn't publish on a set schedule, which is like possibly breaking one of the cardinal rules of YouTube, right? But he makes, or at least up until last year or 2 years ago, maybe, he made most of his money from YouTube. The YouTube algorithm changed, or he did something to upset the YouTube gods and got locked out of his account for a temporary amount of time. And he freaked out. And after that, he set up a Patreon. He set up a Memberful for the podcast that he does with Mike Hurley. And he recently set up a Substack. So now he has 4 platforms where he's making money from his members. And they can pay on whatever platform they want. And he knows that if YouTube disappeared, he'd still be in good shape. So that's what I would tell YouTubers, right? If you're only making money on YouTube, then you are beholden to the whims of the YouTube gods. The same thing could be said of social media. I mean, just look at X over the last year. 97% of advertisers from this one company have left X and haven't come back. And now X is panicking and going, well, maybe we'll charge every user $1 per year. Which is, by the way, a terrible idea, right? Now you're just saying, oh, well, okay, we're going to make 60 cents and have everybody's financial information, right? Meanwhile, X capriciously changes things. We don't like that you're including links. We want to keep people on our platform. We want to prioritize native video. So don't link to your YouTube video, right? And it's not just X that's the problem, right? It's every social network. They're looking out for number one. They are number one. You are number whatever. And you are making content for them. With your podcast, you are making content for you that you can then distribute and syndicate to everything else. And I think that far and away is the strongest reason why, even if you're really comfortable, if you're big on Pinterest, this is why you should still have a podcast, because it is you own your content.
What do you think the short-term gratification, like what I'm kind of sculpting this into is like a typical offer hook, which is like, you could get sexy end result in short amount of time that has like minimal pain to do. And so one of the aspects I'm going to ask from you is like, okay, if someone leverages, and this is a nice coalescence, because this is a place where your automation comes in handy and like your strength at being able to do this so efficiently. But I think that the thing that's going to be maybe a little bit different is how it's positioned. So instead of saying, hey, I'm a podcast automation coach, it might be, I get you XYZ result, which I happen to do by showing people how to very efficiently, cheaply, fast, like produce a podcast in this would be the sexy sell that's not true. Produce your podcast in no extra time than you already spend on social media and get your social media done for free. Like, that would be the sexiest, but we obviously can't get there.
Right.
But so I got myself off track. So the sexy end result, yeah, short term. So what do you reckon in terms of short term gratification without waiting the 1 year of flatness before it goes up? I mean, like, I make these episodes, no one listens to them, and I'm just going to keep making them because, like, that's the game, you know, or that's the work. But as I say, the whole relationship building thing, that is a short-term win. What do you think the short-term payoffs are of podcasting, if you can think of any?
I mean, for 1 year, you're creating content, right? That's content that can be reused on whatever platform you're most comfortable with. Number two, you're still, even if very few people are listening, you're giving yourself an opportunity to position yourself as an expert, right? And so you're creating this resource, right? When I have discovery calls for people now and they have a specific question about a thing in podcasting, I send them to an episode of Podcast Workflows. I say, hey, this is just a quick 5-minute episode. It's going to explain everything I just explained to you here, possibly more clearly, right? So it serves as a or like a portfolio, like a knowledge portfolio, right? We both come from the web design space. Your portfolio was everything for a short amount of time. Maybe it still is. I feel like it's less so now. But like for a long time, like if you didn't have a portfolio page, oof, you might as well not go bidding on projects. Your podcast is like your knowledge portfolio, right? And finally, it's also a place for you to test ideas, right? So let's say you're a course creator or an author or a speaker, and you're trying to figure out what topics to include or how to frame particular topics. You can use your podcast as a testing ground for that stuff. Right. I'm thinking about doing a course on mini podcasting. Will people like it? Let me release a podcast episode or a few podcast episodes on how to do a mini podcast and see how those do. And if they do great, great. Now I'll just add a little dynamic ad to the end or in the middle of that episode saying, hey, if you're interested, buy my mini podcasting course. Right. So I think those are a few really good opportunities for podcasting, even if you're not like crushing it with listeners right in the beginning.
Can we zoom on the last one? Like, how would you gauge this? You're saying if it has more listens, you assume it resonates, or would it be, we would look at that metric of the Apple podcast, like what was the label for the amount of people who've listened to the percentage of it?
Yeah.
So consumption would presumably be your validation metric there, right?
It depends, because for me, yes, right? 70% of my podcast listeners use Apple Podcasts. A shocking amount of those podcast listeners come from mainland China, which I thought was spam, but like I reached out to Apple Podcasts about, and I was like, is this, like, what's wrong with these numbers? And they're like, what do you mean? There's nothing wrong with these numbers. And I'm like, so these are real listens from mainland China? And they're like, yes. And I'm like, that's weird. It's weird because it's an English podcast about a guy who knows nothing about like Chinese culture. Like, I don't know why, but whatever. It's something that I lose sleep over. Anyway, yes, that would be a metric for me, right? But if you find that like most of your listeners are coming from Spotify, or like it's like 20% across a bunch, then I would go to your podcast hosting platform and look at downloads, because even though downloads are not the best metric, they are still the most, I don't want to say consistent, but consistent metric that we have. It's the most well-understood metric that we have. So if you see like, oh, well, my episode on why you should never have sponsors for your podcast got 30 downloads, but my episode on how to get sponsors got 300 downloads. Well, now you know people are interested in getting sponsors.
Yeah.
It's like basically a real life example for me, by the way.
So it is that the how to get sponsors one, that is like validated as having a lot of interest.
Cool. Yeah. And it's like, and I tried for a while, like the first iteration of Podcast Workflows was how to make money podcasting without sponsors, and just like no one
cared. The thing The thing that's cool about that, though, that metric of how to get sponsors, is that someone listening to that is necessarily either a podcaster or wants to be one, but needs an objection squashed. And this is something that's coming up for me. Like, I remember when I first started my web design business, I wanted to build websites for people who didn't have websites yet. But it was such a terrible idea, because then I had to convince somebody of the value of a website. And what ended up working the best was like, don't ever do someone's first website. I mean, in the end, I did end up doing a lot of first websites, but it was for people who believed in websites. Don't ever convince somebody about a website, because they're going to be terrible customers. Best people to build websites for are the people who just need a better one. So what's coming up for me as we're thinking about this is like, I'm steering you in the direction here of like conquering objections of content creators who are like, I just want to do social media. I don't even want a podcast. But as we're having this conversation, I don't know if these are actually the best avatar for you as customers. I feel like maybe the better one is like someone who's maybe like, I should be podcasting, but it just feels like more effort than it's worth. I'm kind of guessing that's the better one. But the fact that you've gotten such good results on that How to Get Sponsors one, what it tells me is that it's people are either listening to it strategically, like I might, right? Like I've got the full-time creator podcast, but I don't know how to do the sponsor stuff. So I would be a good customer because I am a podcaster, or they're listening to it aspirationally, which is like, it could be cool to start a podcast and wow, I could get sponsorship revenue. Both of these people would be awesome leads. So with all this stuff I'm saying, again, pretending you're coaching a client on this, if we're trying to get your client to think of what good lead magnets might be for them, do you think you would be a little bit more inclined to go the route of, hey, business owner in general, here is all the awesome stuff a podcast could do for you, and here's how you could get going with one in a way that squashes all your objections? That's like path A. Or path B, hey, business owner who wants to podcast, who knows you should be podcasting but doesn't because it's too hard, here's a way that you can podcast and it'll be easy. Which of these do you like better?
I think it's option B, right? I've thought about both of these things, and I kind of feel like by the time someone gets to me and like the content I've been doing, I would like them. All of my content is positioned around how to do a good podcast, and so I'm not in the business of convincing them that they should have a podcast.
And are you more inclined, and gosh, we needed, as always, I scope about 6 hours worth of conversation for my talks. And I'm just looking at the clock. I'm like, oh, okay, we got to tie a nice bow on this in 10 minutes. When you imagine your long-term goals and how you want to help and stuff. So I could see this going so many different ways. The easiest sell is always going to be like the closer to the money stuff. And getting started. So what I've noticed, at least in my time in business, and I think probably applies to everything, is that a given audience will always have more newbies than experts. Just always, because people try podcasting, they're like, nope, not for me. And now this is one person who was up here and isn't down here. They have less buying power. They have less expertise, but there are more of them. Are you more inclined to help with like, hey, newbie who's interested in podcasting but has all the objections? I'm going to help you get a podcast started very efficiently that conquers all your objections, that kind of thing. Or are you more inclined to be like, hey, super seasoned person who wants to hone and refine? Really?
That one. Because my whole career is basically making the mistake of going after the newbies who have no money and can't pay me what I need to be paid. Like, my audience is not big enough for me to sell the $30 product for the newbie to help them get up and running. And so like some of that stuff I make for free, but like where my real money comes in is, helping brands or companies launch a podcast as part of like their marketing efforts. And then people who have a podcast who understand, hey, if I want to make this a thing, then I need to invest in it a little bit. So, I mean, I guess they could be newbies, but the core thing here is that they are willing to invest in their podcast.
Yeah. So it sounds like the avatar would be an established business who has money and profit and performant channels, and they just want another one, pretty much. But in terms of the actual stage, because like the reason that I think it could be challenging to only target seasoned podcasting experts is that given that your audience is creators in general, if I listen to, like, we did the shorts for that interview with Jordan, right? So if I listen to this interview with Jordan, I'm learning about hiring a VA. For me to be interested in that, the prerequisite is like, I am a business owner. No one would listen to that interview if they weren't.
Right.
Or, I mean, they might, but like, we pretty much know someone listening to that would be a business owner, but there is not at all a prerequisite that they are a seasoned podcaster. So like the slice of the relevant audience would be so small. But
So maybe this challenge to my thinking is that my podcast workflows podcast is for those people, and how I built it should be more for the solopreneur who knows that they should have a podcast but doesn't have one yet. Maybe that's the only prerequisite for lead magnets for this show, because my membership is also built around that. Like, my membership now is, yes, you get ad-free extended versions of this podcast, but the real value is in I'm teaching you how to automate your processes 90% of the time with a slant towards podcasting. Like, I'm going to show you how to use schedulers, and like, yes, that's more generally applicable to a bunch of things, but I'm going to show you how to use schedulers to effectively save a bunch of time booking your guests.
Yeah, I think this is interesting to think about. I think we're on a good thread here, because I think about it as somebody who is in your target audience, but does not resonate with the positioning. So for me, when I hear about the podcast automation stuff, like, I've listened to some of your episodes on there, but I don't know, like, I'm a developer. I'm really good at Zapier. I'm good at automation. So like, I'm not, for you, like, what I would want to know from Joe would be like, how do I make sure I'm even doing this the right way? How do I make sure I'm not spinning my wheels doing dumb stuff with my production? Like, what's the way that I should be podcasting in the most efficient way? I don't care about automation because I feel like I know how to do automation.
Right.
And so if the hook is like, hey, here's a specific technical skill that I'm all about, and somebody listening. But if your hook was, I teach people how to efficiently produce hyper profitable podcasts in the least time, effort, and classic Alex Hormozi thing, right? Time, effort, and sacrifice. That's what he talks about in his value equation. So like, with the least time, effort, and sacrifice required, I would be like, ooh, that's cool. Especially if the lead magnet was like, the five ways that I wasted 100 hours for my first 20 episodes. I'd be like, oh,
that's a really good one, actually. Yeah.
Or like, you know, the five biggest mistakes newbie podcasters do, where they typically waste like 40 hours a month, or a case study of a client for whom you optimize their processes, that now they are spending, like, they reduce their podcast production time by 50% and save now $300 for every episode they release. I would download that.
Yeah.
So that would be the other hook. So like, I see two hooks. One is like, you are podcasting, you're flying by the seat of your pants like Zach. And I want to show you how I'm able to produce, and you do this already. You do speak to this. I produce three podcasts and it only costs me X hours and whatever dollars per week. But I would really love a lead magnet around this other angle of like, if you are Avatar, and I think there will be different ones, I think it would be worth some thinking and surveying to see how many are, like, what your primary platform is for your ideal audience avatar, if they are primarily social media, primarily YouTube, whatever. But then a call out that's like, hey, if you are posting on YouTube right now, and that's where you're getting most of your traffic, you stand the risk of platform dependence. And did you know that if you were podcasting, if you follow my special secret sauce, you could be releasing a podcast in addition to your YouTube for only an extra minimal amount of time per week and minimal amount of dollars. And you would get benefit. You'd get all these relationships from like the people you talk with. You'd get a bunch of authority. You would get content that like lasts and is sticky. You'd get just like smash them with benefits and kill all the objections. And I've got a lead magnet where I walk you through exactly how a YouTuber can pivot into podcasting, and you can get set up and it'll be so easy, whatever. Like, I think that would be interesting to experiment with. I don't know what you think about all this.
Yeah, I think leaning into the general ideas that we're talking about here, like the broad strokes, is really good. And like finding that right now, because like, you're right, like the thing I've noticed is like when I talk automation, it's either like there are very few people in the middle of, yes, I want to learn automation. It's mostly like, I already know automation, or that scares me and confuses me, and I don't even want to wade into that. But like the save 12 hours a week producing your podcast, or start a podcast without wasting 40 hours a month, right? Like that's the thing that resonates with people. Cause like you said, like time sacrifice, effort. And so like, however I can best help those people is how I should position it. Right. So maybe as far as I know, we're like up on time here. My direction for this show, while continuing the mission of coaching calls and case studies for solopreneurs and creators, make my solo episodes more about the benefits of podcasting and putting in the right workflows without it being too scary. And then during every episode, when I mention either workflows or podcast growth or something like that, I have that casual mention link, lead magnet, content upgrade ready to go. I think that's really smart.
Yeah, and you could even find ways to tie it in with more broader pains too. Because like, I'm just thinking about like that episode with Jordan. There wouldn't have been too many podcast related tie-ins, but there, if you can tie it in with like a broad business pain, like someone talking about, and you'd have to find a way to do this without being douchey. But if someone's talking about a broad business pain of not having enough clients, that's like the kind of thing that could segue really nicely into a lead magnet that's about like why podcasting is awesome and how you can do it efficiently.
Right.
I know we're both trying to tie this up. Probably what we should do is think of a way that we can like have this be a part one. Have you go off and do some things. Like what I'm wondering is if you could go off and plan a solo episode that you kind of like I did with this last one, that you structure in a way that you can slice it later into standalone lead magnets. Like I would love to see one that's like, if you have a client that you saved a specific number of hours and dollars with efficiency. Like my solo episode last week was like the biggest conversion mistakes I see course creators making. And I kind of structured it in a way where it was like six chapters. Each one was a video and each one could be a lead magnet. I'm just trying to think of like you're overwhelmed, the fires to put out and stuff. Can you think of ways that you could create a solo episode, but also have the content of that episode basically be a lead magnet for testing later so that you can go off and like test some ideas and see what gets opt-ins without you having to sit down especially to make a lead magnet?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I have like I got to write a case study for one of my clients, Annie, who was the first to pose the three kids, three podcast question to me.
Cool.
She hired me for coaching and she's killing it now. Like she was like really overwhelmed with her process and I helped her put a few things in place. I gave her some ideas for lightening the load for episode creation. And like I need to touch base with her again, but just based on what I've been seeing her doing, like I think it's paying off for her. So
awesome. And I took Zach Spuckler's, he was a guest on my podcast recently. I took his Facebook Ads Bootcamp and he was saying that case studies as lead magnets are doing really, really well right now in ads. I think I heard something from Alex Hormozy saying the same. I wonder if you could think of case studies, like think of a handful. So she would be one, this woman you just mentioned. If you can think of another case study of someone you coached who has had like really great authority building benefits or really great relationship building ones. Like basically you could just kind of record a series of case study episodes and then those could also be your lead magnet. And then like what I think would be really cool is if you could go out, record these, but then also test these as lead magnets. I can help you run some A/B tests on the site to validate that way. You could do some A/B tests on the podcast to validate that way. But like, I just think it'd be really cool to start to think about like what's the fastest way for Joe from here to ideally get a case study lead magnet shipped by the time the next episode comes out that can be promoting that case study lead magnet. Obviously, it's very ambitious, but like, right. What do you think the fastest way for you to ship a case study lead magnet to start validating interest would be?
I mean, I think, so I'll say this. I think if I'm going to do a case study, like I want to I'm going to write it and I'm going to do it really well. It's going to be a deep dive for podcast workflows too. Like that's kind of what I'm thinking. But I also do have a bunch of lead magnets around the things that we talked about today. So, I think like the fastest thing for me to do is take something I have and reposition it properly and then work on the case study for my next solo episode. Okay. My next solo episode after like the, I have the gift guide one planned for, I think right after this episode, but, so that I think that's my best course of action right now. And I think that, you know, I think that this has been really helpful in helping me figure out kind of who I want to talk to and how I can reposition the show without alienating it.
Yeah.
Without alienating my current audience.
And it sounds like all the bones are here. Like for you listening on Joe's audience, like presumably none of this stuff we're talking about today makes you feel alienated, I would hope, because Joe's not here saying, hey, everyone has to start a podcast to resonate with me. It's more like he obviously believes in podcasting because it's been life-changing for him. And this is kind of a direction there. So here's what I'm thinking as a next step. It sounds like your site gets about 2,000 visitors on Google Analytics. If that's true, it's not like a huge amount of traffic. If you imagine a few percent conversion rate, like it would take a while to get good comprehensive A-B test there. But nonetheless, I could launch an A-B test for you. I can do them usually pretty quickly. That we could have the website testing between two if you want, and then you could test them on the podcast. But what are your existing lead magnets? Before we go, I'd like to hear a rapid fire of just what already exists.
My podcast process template, which is like a whole podcast planner built in Notion or Airtable for getting and tracking guests and sponsors. My podcast growth audit template. And so this is the exact template I use when someone pays me to audit their podcast, but they can do it themselves. And then my SMASH framework, which is the five ways that you can make money podcasting and how to figure out which one works best for you.
I think that as I'm imagining this avatar we've been talking about today, like the someone who knows they should be podcasting, but they're not yet, but they're looking for the thing to kind of push them off the edge. I think the third one would be the easiest to reposition because the other two are kind of predicated upon some existing momentum. Like they wouldn't be valuable if you don't have a podcast yet, I would think. So yeah, maybe the thing to test, the easy thing would be that third one. We could test it on the website and you could start running it on the podcast and think of ways that you can promote it both with the inside the episode mentions, like just within the context, if possible, which it might not be. That might need a specially crafted one, and then testing it in your ads. But I think at this point, since we're coming up against the stop and we're both tired, I'm tired. It was an intense combo. Maybe what we do is we just stop this for today. I mean, you said your goal at the beginning was that you wanted to leave with more clarity on what your main call to action and value proposition would be. I don't think we 100% got there, but I think we got toward it.
Yeah.
Do you feel?
I think we got close enough, right? Because this is something I want to think about in the larger context of the other stuff I'm working on too. So I think we got close enough to that.
So maybe this is a good place to leave. And then from here, you go think about this stuff solo, run some experiments, whatever. Maybe I'm happy. Like this was fun for me. So if you found my insights to be insightful versus just some dude randomly blathering on, I'm happy to circle back with you in like, I don't know, a couple weeks, month, whatever you think makes sense. And we could pick it up from there and strategize some more, whatever you want to do. Hopefully you, the listener, thinking through this whole thing has given you some insights about your business. Joe, do you want to add any nice like bow tying sign off thing to make this feel like a natural conclusion of the episode?
We talked about a bunch of stuff, bunch of lead magnets and resources, which I'll link to mine and Zach's over at the show notes for this page. That's howibuilt.it/341. But Zach, I want to thank you for taking the time to chat with me today. I want to thank the sponsors. And until next time, get out there and build something.
Great. And so I guess we'll just smush my sign off against yours to make it make sense. So on my end, if you're listening on the Full-Time Creator podcast, the show notes will be at ftcreator.com/episode11. So that's the word episode and then the number 11. If you want to get into Joe's world, his podcast is awesome. It's called How I Built It, and the website is howibuilt.it. Don't you dare call it How I Built This, because he will stab you in the cheek. And yeah, so I guess that's about it. If you want me to do any CRO audit or help for your website, that is at crowiz.co/go. And Joe, if someone wants to follow you, is howibuilt.it the best place to go? Where do you like to send people? It sounds like we got to make some opt-in pages for the lead magnets, but I assume by the time someone hears this, howibuilt.it homepage should have something, maybe?
Yeah, definitely. Howibuilt.it homepage will have stuff. I'm at Jay Casabona everywhere too. So if you want to directly connect on any social network, I'm going to say I'm at Jay Casabona.
Awesome. Well, this has been great, Joe. So nice chatting. Thank you to the listener for being here. And thank you, Joe, for being here. See you guys.